I thank also José Cel for giving me the opportunity to present our data. And I wanted to mention that José had asked Professor Humayun to come and present the result, but unfortunately was not available at these dates, so he couldn't come. And so I will shortly review the data that have been obtained in Paris in the group of in the clinical group of Professor Cel on epiretinal implants. So for epiretinal implants, so the idea is to have the implant on the side of the ganglion cells. So here the photoreceptors have disappeared, so you remain with the inner retina, and we've heard a lot about the subretinal implant with Professor Zwenner and Professor Palanca, and the idea is that you can also come and stimulate at this side. So these were really the first tests that were done in clinical trials and show that it's possible to reactivate the retina. And so the device from Professor Humayun and the company Second Sight is such that you have goggles taking images, sending it to a microprocessor, converting it into electrical stimulation, and these electrical stimulation are sent here to the chip, and the electronic chip is here generating the currents that are sent to the microelectrode array. Here you see the microelectrode array that really delivers the electrical stimulation on the retina. And you see here that you have 60 electrodes, and so when you try in patient, you can see that if you present a square on the screen, that when the system is on, the patient can find the square, whereas when the system is off, of course they cannot. And you see that these, when the system is on, you see that the results are very stable in time, and you can see that the patient are able to find out the square even after 4 years of implantation. I will just show you a video from one patient who was implanted in Paris, so he was affected by retinitis pigmentosa, and you can see that in fact this patient is not able to read a few words. So I apologize, it's a French sentence. His glass. His glass of wine. What is interesting now is to see the image captured by the camera and the electrical stimulation of the different electrodes. And it's clear that it's quite difficult to read, and I'm not sure that many of you would be able to really read the sentences using just these images. And so we can understand why, in fact, only very few people, few patients are able to read such words with the retinal implants. And the idea is that we want that most or even all of the patient could get to these results. So just shortly also, I just want to show you also some of the data from Pixum Vision. They have started clinical trials with Iris 1 with 49 electrodes. So we did help them to test for stability in time, and we did some implantation in pigs for more than 4 months just to demonstrate that the system was stable. And now they have started their clinical trials with Iris 2 with 150 electrodes. So in fact, the system is quite similar to the system from Second Sight. You see a camera taking images, a microprocessor, also a system to stimulate the implant in vivo. You see the implant here with also a chip here, and then the implant here with the 49 electrodes or the 150 electrodes. And just a video to show you that the patients are also able to find out objects and grab them. So this is just one video, but there are other videos showing how the patients are able to find objects. But at the moment, the clinical trials are not finished, so we don't have the full result. So here are the new design, new device with the 150 electrodes, and you see the goggles and microprocessors that were generated by PixInVision, and here the 150 electrode array at the back of the eye. So we will hear more in the coming coming days. So what Professor Palanca showed was that, in fact, if we want to have some more useful vision to recognize faces, to move autonomously, we need to have, or to recognize objects like the stepper, we need to have more than 1,000 pixel. And this was a study done by Professor Safran in Geneva, where he showed that even with an eccentricity of 15 degrees, I mean, patients or normal volunteers could read with only 600 pixels. But these are normal volunteers, so it's clear that the vision would be less with a patient with a degraded image. So if we now look at such a video, but with an implant, we can tell, in fact, what would be the vision with an implant. And so we did some tests with this type of simulation. And you see here a video. so this area is the area of Bastille. And you see the tower here from Bastille. And here the opera. And you can now tell that when you're seeing people coming and crossing the street, you can see also the car, that with 1,000 pixels, maybe you can easily orientate in an unknown environment. So the idea is, how can we come from the 60 electrode array to 1,000, or like Professor Professor Zwenner showed, the 1,600 electrodes array, but so that, in fact, the patient can really discriminate this type of images. One may wonder why, with the current system, current device, it's not possible to reach this level of visual acuity. And so what we think is that maybe because in the current system, you have electrodes on the electrode array, and then you have a very distant return ground. And so as Professor Palanca showed, then there's a really a huge distribution of current. And this is, in fact, the distribution in dark here of the current. And you see between the stimulation area and the neighboring area, there's not a huge difference in electrical current. Whereas if you go to a concentric bipolar stimulation, or even this with a ground grid return electrode, you can see that you can greatly increase the level of current at the stimulation point and at the neighboring areas. And these, in fact, all these different systems in red were done with the ground grid. And depending, in fact, of the ground grid conductivity. So the more conductive is this grid, you see the more difference you can have between the neighboring area and the stimulating area. So it's why we started to look for new materials that could increase the conductivity of this ground grid, and we started to work on diamond. Diamond is known to be conductive and even to be a semiconductive element if we dope it with nitrogen or bor. And so we have worked with different people, and the idea is that also the electrical chemical window of this material is much larger, so you reduce hydrolysis of water in the neighboring of the electrode. So you see, when you compare it to platinum, it's much better, because here you see it's much wider. So we have done some tests, first to see whether, in fact, diamond would support cell culture or would allow cell to survive. And we could show that, in fact, with the diamond, it was possible to have cells surviving in contact with the diamond if we coat it. We have also done some studies on graphene, because graphene is another way, another material with carbon, another carbon material. And we could show also that in fact you could see that the graphene can allow ganglion cell to survive in contact with the carbon, with the graphene. And also, in fact, we showed that the axons of the ganglion cells were following, in fact, the age of the graphene, which supposed that it's more oxidized at the border, and so it allow a better, in fact, contact with the cells. And then others have shown in Australia that it's possible to use, in fact, diamond electrode and stimulate ganglion cell, so that, in fact, you can really use carbon diamond as an electrode. So then we looked whether, in fact, diamond is biocompatible in vivo. And so we have used such a retinal implant in vivo in dystrophic rats. And you can see such an implant here in the subretinal space, and here the glial cell layer, and here the bipolar cell layer that we want to stimulate. So, in fact, we used not this type of flat implants, because you see that there's a layer that is often in between the implant and the retina. So we used 3D-shaped implant, not only because there's a better interaction with the tissue, but also because we showed in some kind of modeling that if we have such 3D wells, in fact, the stimulation current is more localized in these wells, and so it would be easier to stimulate neurons in this well than neurons in the neighboring wells. We could show this in the modeling, showing that, in fact, when we have 3D arrays, in fact, the difference between different gray level is much better here with the green ground, but it's also pretty good even with a very distant ground than with a planar array. So we use this type of 3D-shaped array, you see, and depositing a diamond. So we developed a complete way of having diamond on such implants. It was quite difficult because normally the deposition of diamond is at very high temperature, so it was a full development for the fabrication of these implants. But then, you see, we could have this implant below the retina, and so Julie in our lab was really doing this surgery, which are quite difficult. And you can see here that, in fact, the neurons are really integrating into these wells here, and that we could count the bipolar cell here labeled in green, and so that we could count in the different implants, and also show that, in fact, when we have diamond, we have many more bipolar cells in the wells, so it seems that diamond is very highly biocompatible. But normally, in this case, the diamond is very flat, and we know that if we want to use diamond as an electrode, we need to increase the surface of the material. So we have worked with our colleagues of the CEA to see how we could increase, in fact, the surface of this diamond electrode. And finally, they came out with a structure you see here with a very high surface ratio, because they use carbon nanotubes and covered these carbon nanotubes with diamond. And so using this, they could show that this is very highly biocompatible, but it's possible also to do some stimulation of neurons, and that, in fact, you see the properties of these electrodes are highly comparable to black platinum, which is one of the best type of electrode for stimulation and recording. So this is, we believe that this should be a very good material for the coming implants, because it would be very highly stable, because diamond is very stable, but also we could afford a very good stimulation of retinal neurons. Then, in fact, we wanted to work on implants with a ground grid. And in fact, Professor Palenka at Stanford has generated, as he showed, this system with a central electrode and a ground grid around. So we wanted to see whether it's possible to use this system and whether it would really improve. Unfortunately, the company Pixium has decided to work with Professor Palanca and to fabricate this type of device here in France. So they have even improved further the fabrication of these implants. And so we decided to work together and to see whether, in fact, these implants could go to clinical trials. So the first thing was to test whether, in fact, this new fabricated implant can stimulate the right retina, as Professor Palanca showed you. And of course, it did. Or not of course, but it did. But what I would like to show you is some result that we obtained on the primate retina, because we want to go to clinical trials. And so we want to see whether this implant can stimulate the retinal network from a primate model. So, but the difficulty was we have no blind primates. So how can we test these implants on a blind retina? So the idea was to do the test ex vivo. And how can we generate a blind retina? So we decided to take the retina of primates and in fact to cut them into the thickness so that we would remove the photoreceptors. Oh, sorry, yeah. So, and you see here such a retina where we had removed, in fact, the photoreceptor. And what's nice is when we keep this type of cut retina for just 1 or 2 days in culture, the remnants of photoreceptors are completely removed from this tissue. So we do have a blind retina here that we can use in multi-electrode array recording to test the stimulation with the implants. So we did this test, so on the system with a multi-electrode array, a commercial multi-electrode array, recording the spikes here from the retinal ganglion cells. And you see that when we do a full field stimulation of the implant, each time we do such a stimulation, we can record spikes, and you see that we have many more spikes just after the stimulation than here in the spontaneous activity. We can show that these spikes are really generated through the activation of bipolar cells, because here, if we apply some blockers of synaptic transmission, we do completely reduce these evoked response in the retinal ganglion cells. So, but this is not vision. I mean, stimulating the whole implant would not give vision to a patient. So can we stimulate one pixel and obtain a response in a ganglion cell? So what we did was to look at the response of single ganglion cell and see whether we can activate this ganglion cell with 1 or 2 pixels or more. So this is, for instance, with the pixel of 140 micrometer, one cell here, which was localized here. And you see that, in fact, we were recording this cell with an electrode that was far distant because, in fact, we were recording its axon. And what you can see is that, in fact, only 2 pixels here generated an increase in the firing frequency of this ganglion cell. If we had some cells also where only 1 pixel was able to generate the activity, and I will provide an example of such a single pixel activation with the implant with a 100 micron pixel size. And you see that, in fact, in this case, only with pixel 60, we can elicit some spikes, whereas with the other pixel, we never generate any spikes. You see here, with pixel 60, we have a big increase in the firing frequency, whereas all the other pixels only have the spontaneous activity. So this indicates that we have a really very high resolution with this pixel. Then we need to know, in fact, how much of light intensity we need to apply on this single pixel to activate the implant. And so you see, we did a different simulation. Oh, I lost the stimulation, but this is 3.5, and this, I think, is 5 milliwatt per millimeter, square millimeter. And you see that, in fact, we need 5 milliwatt per square millimeter to obtain the maximum stimulation, but that this stimulation is maximum with only 5 milliseconds. So it means that with the type of camera or stimulation, we could in fact have a fast refresh rate of the stimulation. Another important aspect is in fact how much of the pixel do we need to cover in order to induce a response. And so this is what we did, was to have a fixed spot, but you see to move the spot away from the active pixel. And you see that in fact only, so we move it 14 micrometer each time, so it was with the 140 micrometer pixel size, and you see that only with 5 of these steps we can really elicit a response. So this means that we need to cover at least half of these pixels in order to elicit a response. So this will be very important to define the spot that we will be using in clinical trials. Finally, I told you that we were recording axonal spikes. So we used the method developed by Eiji Shichinisky, where in fact he can measure the speed of propagation of axonal spikes. And so this is when you record the spike on an electrode here, if you take the same window here on the different recording electrodes, and in fact average all these smaller window here, you can see that sometime on some electrodes, you can find a response here. And on some, of course, you do not see this response, and you can plot, in fact, all the electrodes where you have a response, and you see this gives you, in fact, the axons, the path of the axon, and you can then measure, in fact, the speed of propagation of the spikes in this axon. And so Eiji has shown that, in fact, depending on the cell type, if it's a parcel ganglion cell or a midget ganglion cell, the speed of propagation will be quite different. And when we measure, in fact, in some of the ganglion cells that are generating spikes, we could show that we have a speed that is highly compatible with the midget cell. So it's quite interesting to demonstrate that we can activate midget cell here with this implant. So finally, I just want to show you also that we obtain some post-mortem human retina. In this case, we could not do a section in the photoreceptor layer simply because the period of time to get the retina is such that the tissue is not the best shape. And so we cannot generate a section in the retinal thickness. But still, when we use the full retina, what we could show is that if we stimulate these human retina with the implant, we can elicit a response in the human retina. And you see that, in fact, we have very low power to obtain this response and very short time. So it's quite encouraging. So we have demonstrated ex vivo that it's possible to stimulate a blind primate retina. But now we would like to have more in vivo results and also prepare the surgery for the clinical trials. So we have started with the CR at Mersenne to do some surgery, and Yannick Lemaire has done this surgery. You see here the implant in vivo in the subretinal space, you see here of a macaque, and you see here that the photoreceptor layer have disappeared here just above the retina. So we will try to see whether it's possible to activate this type of implant in vivo to demonstrate that they're really efficacious and see whether we can demonstrate, in fact, single-cell pixel activation or more. We might have to activate more pixel in order to elicit a response. So I think I showed you that we are close to go to clinical trials with this type of subretinal implants, and also that in the future it would be very interesting to integrate some diamond electrode onto these implants. So now we need just to have goggles. I think Riyad presented yesterday these specific type of camera, asynchronous camera or asynchronous sensors, where you can have a very fast response at the millisecond or microsecond. You can really generate visual information at a very fast speed, and that it's possible, in fact, using these data to generate, in fact, the response here in ganglion cells. So this was the work generated by Henri Lorache in our lab for his PhD. And so we are, at least we, means Riyad, and here Guillaume Chengo and the whole team, to generate the goggles. So this was the first prototypes. We have now the final prototypes that looks more like the one from Pixium used for Iris 1 and Iris 2. And the idea is that to get ready for the clinical trials. So of course, all this work was done with many different people. Paul-Henri Prévost and Sami Dallouz did all the ex vivo work, and Paul is working with all the team at Mersenne and also with Céline to do the in vivo experiment, and Yannick is doing the surgeries. Amel did all the work on diamond, and Milas did all the work on the modeling. And of course, we got many funding, and especially the funding from Foundation Fighting Blindness. And I should mention that I have some interest in Pixium with developing these implants. So thank you very much.